Do you want to relax? Are you having trouble sleeping or focusing? CBD reduces anxiety, chronic pain, seizures, PTSD, depression. Try our CBD gummies or chocolates. You will be very satisfied. Visit CBDCollections.net. CBDCollections.net. CBDCollections.net.
Hi folks, Chris Bailey here. And with my colleague Denise, we like bringing you Jamaicans doing great and interesting thing. And today we again have a great author of a book. His name is Dale Marfold. He's a man of deep Jamaican roots. His life has been formed by living all over the place, from England to up and down the East Coast of the United States, and now presently in Florida. He's anchored his educational experience as an English teacher. He has launched this tremendously ambitious goal of writing a series of novels about the lives of Jamaican families, with relationship issues being at the heart of it. So sit back and be prepared to be enchanted as Dale shares his life story and how he goes about writing the first in the series of books about our life as Jamaicans. So doing the interview will be Denise, my partner in crime. Denise, take it away.
Thanks, Chris. Hi, Dale.
Hi, Denise. Hi, Chris. Nice to be here.
Oh, it's so good to hear from you. So let's begin this journey. Let us know some of your Jamaican roots. Tell us about us.
Okay, well, first again, thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to be here with you guys. So, yeah, my mother's family came from, they're from Westmoreland, that's where she's from, and they had been in Jamaica for a long, long, long time, you know, several generations back. My father's father and his mother basically came from Lebanon and then settled in Kingston. So that's kind of, and that's where I grew up. I grew up in Kingston, born and grew up in Kingston. Yeah.
Ooh, that's nice. So what was childhood like for you?
Childhood was lovely growing up in Jamaica. There was a sense of, you know, I don't know, just running around barefoot. I was used to being barefoot. And, you know.
So the typical Jamaican boy experience. Right.
Exactly.
So you went to high school in Jamaica?
Yes, I did go to high school. I went to Priory. You know, they call it the American school. That's where I went to high school.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't know if you were a KC or a Campion or, you know, one of those. Okay. So you clearly immigrated. What motivated it, and what was the adjustment like from Jamaica to, it looked like you did the diasporan route. You went to England, Canada, and what was it like? Snow and all.
Yeah, so, well, actually, I kind of went to Florida first, and then I did some of the other areas. So, yeah, so we moved in, I guess, what they could call the manly years, you know, when things were struggling between Manly and Seaga and the whole thing. And
five
that's
flights
what,
to the to, you were one of the Jamaicans when he said five flights to Florida every year, every day or something like that.
Five
you remember
flights
that?
A day. Yeah, so,
yeah. I remember when he said that. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, exactly. I don't remember, so, but I know about it.
That's when we left. And actually, my fourth novel will be about that period of time. And then we came to Florida. And we actually, my parents had sent me off a year earlier and sent me to boarding school because they didn't like what was happening and they, you know, for my safety and so on. And then they moved up. And, you know, I was young. It was an easy transition, partially because I had gone to boarding school up here for a year. but partially because I wanted to sow my wild oats, and I saw America as a place to kind of be a little bit wild, which, to be honest with you, I was wild during those days. So
most teenage young men are, you know. That's just part of the course.
Yes.
So you are a man of words. Who influenced your decision to pursue teaching as an English teacher?
Yeah, sure. So I actually became a Christian when I was 17. And I had never
And then
really
you backslide? Is that what you do back again? You backslide?
No. It was about a year or two after moving up that I did become a Christian, because I moved up when I was 15, 16. Mm-hmm. So that kind of got me sort of into writing, and, you know, and I started writing sort of like worship songs type of thing. And then, I am so sorry. The question just slipped me. Or what influenced me, right? And then from I went into the ministry for a while, and then I ended up getting married to my wife, and I had come out of the ministry at that point, and I decided, what am I going to do? And I decided I could become an English teacher, because then I could be a missionary anywhere in the world and get a job teaching English.
Yeah.
And that was kind of how that led into that. And then, of course, the longer I never did end up doing the missionary thing, but just being in English and teaching novels and teaching poetry, you know, increased my love of the language and of writing.
Yeah. And were you influenced by any Jamaican writers at that point? I mean, I noticed lately there was a sea of Jamaican or Caribbean, but I'm more interested in Jamaica. There's like a sea of Caribbean writers right now, but coming up, you know?
Yeah.
And then what I noticed in the book, which was really interesting to me, is that you have a Claude McKay poem. And Claude McKay is Jamaican of the Harlem Renaissance.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. I mean, it was nice to see that you brought that up, you know? But he means so much to us. But I'm just saying, in your formative years, because I only learned about, say, Caribbean writers when I went to university, because I was trained in the U.S., so it's primarily American writers that influenced me in my formative years, at least in my high school years. But I'm saying, like, with you, when you came, when did Jamaican writers become a thing for you, or did they ever become a thing for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have to tell you, I really was never much of a reader. And then, again, bring up when I became a Christian, I started reading the Bible on a regular basis. And so that actually taught me a lot about reading, believe it or not, and delving deep into a text. And then from there, I did not really end up getting into Caribbean literature until, I would say, over the last few years.
Really?
Prior to that, as far as literature that I enjoyed, I really did enjoy the Harlem Renaissance, many of the writers there.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until I started to delve into wanting to write about Jamaica that I began exploring, you know, some of these different authors. That's where I learned about Claude McKay and just loved the guy. As a matter of fact, he's probably the key, the first key influence in the Harlem Renaissance. Some may debate if Langston Hughes, but Claude McKay was right there.
Yeah, that was just interesting to me. I mean, it was so positive. And then I noticed in your book, and I was wondering, when the British were trying to stir up, you know, to motivate the people for joining the army and everything, they actually used a Claude McKay poem on the in England. What would you call it? In Parliament. Yeah, Claude McKay.
Yes,
poem
I've heard
there
that.
To rally the troops. So I was thinking, are you bringing up Claude McKay because he's Jamaican, or is it because this book is based on the 40s, around the war era. So why was Claude's poem introduced into your novel? I'm curious.
I think because, you know, it's wonderful when you're writing a novel, particularly a historical fiction novel, and you begin to delve into history and you begin discovering this and that and the other. And I discovered Claude McKay, and I discovered If We Must Die, and which I teach in my literature class. I teach a college literature course. And it just happened that with this character Sharp and his own personal struggle that he was going through, that he was introduced to this poem and he clung on to it for the wrong reasons. He clings on to it for his own personal gain. And, you know, so it's kind of one of those.
Yeah. Well, usually when an artist produces something, so in Claude McKay's perspective, his art, his craft is going to impact you differently from me, different from, say, Archie in the book versus Sharp in the book. You know, I mean, that's just what artists do. They're supposed to influence, you know, whether it's music, literature, whatever. You know, that's how it works. You could have chosen a documentary, but you chose the novel medium instead. How did you choose that path?
Well, it all happened this way. My mother had told my whole family, including my wife and my kids over the years, told us stories about her father, about her growing up in the Westmoreland, the country parts of Jamaica. And she told us about her father, who was a very bad man. And one day we were at the dinner table, and I said, you know, again, I had my kids were right there. My wife was there, my mother. And I said, she was telling us stories. And then I said, I'm going to write a novel. And they all encouraged me, do it. And I chose it in novel form because I wanted to take her stories and fit them into something that was engaging and that people would enjoy reading. And also I would be able to fictionalize and add things as well. So not everything that happens in the book actually happened, but much of it, particularly regarding Malcolm, who would be the character that represents my grandfather, much of what happened there actually is based on truth.
I see. The cover, it's very vibrant with a combination of yellow, green, orange. No, it's the fall season, not green, but, you know. But and the tropical green and blues with the Caribbean sun. What guided your choice here? And what message did you want to convey?
That's an interesting question. So I had another cover, which was beautiful and my family loved. It was kind of looking out of this window onto a beautiful scene, like a bay scene. And there was this tree which was supposed to represent a Caribbean silk cotton tree. And it was beautiful, but I began to realize it really is not what is up to market. It's not the type of cover that's selling books. And, it's unfortunate. Writers go into something because they want their art, but they don't realize that in order to sell your book, if you want people to read your book, you've got to do many things, including presenting your book in such a way as people want to pick it up. So after realizing it really was not up to market, I began looking around a lot of Caribbean books and even other books. And the vibrant color that have almost, not really cartoon, but have a,
a friendly
kind of a cutout.
Yeah, so I understand what you're saying. Yeah. They say that presentation is everything. So this was a good choice on your part.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. I actually even have the cover for my second book, and I love it even more, believe it or not. The focus on blue.
Yeah. The novel tells of several families with prominent characters used to develop a plot. What journey do you want to take the reader on?
I set out, why I created these different characters, is I wanted to, and what I want to do with my whole this set of four novels that I'm planning to write, is I want to give people a taste of different, well, let's put it this way, Marlon James, in his book, A Brief History of Seven Killings, in there he says something to the effect of everyone lives in their own Jamaica. And I was like,
that's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I read that, I was like, that's exactly what I'm trying to do with my books. I want to, you know, explore the different racial, ethnic, socioeconomic. So,
and that's
novel,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's the out of many one people.
Right. And that's one of the reasons. Well, I mean, it was just interesting how I found you on a lark, actually. And I think I told you the story about that. But what we try to do in our interviews, in our podcast, you realize, oh, it's not just one kind of Jamaican. We specifically choose the whole gamut that's reflective of our culture.
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, it was good that I got to learn about your book. I'm very interesting. I tried to do Jamaican books on my spare time. I mean, I read everybody, but I've been really focusing on Jamaican authors simply because it's nice to see a reflection of yourself. You know, for example, I read this book at the time, and it was about actually a people know, the audience probably hopefully they've read it, and where she talks about her experience of working in a beauty parlor, and you could see that experience. I wear dreads now, but at the time, I mean, when the way she described it, it was like I was actually sitting there. That was my life. That was my reflection. So when you write books from such a diverse community as Jamaica, it's good to write about your story so that people who may not have access to that, then we're able to learn about that niche. That community. I think that's the word. Yeah. How long did it take you to produce this excellent work?
Okay. Well, from inception of the idea until the actual publishing of the book was 13 years. So
okay, well, you go find wine. Find wine.
There you go. Yeah, part of that was just I was only writing during the summers, and then part of that was I was learning what I was doing. So the plan is to pick up the pace and, you know, get the other three books written, I would say, within the next 5 years, just, you know, maybe a year and a half in between, something like that. That's the goal. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're here for you. So when you do the other ones, we're inviting you back.
Thanks.
And we usually if we interview authors on the next novel, it takes about a year or two when we get back to them. So in a year or two, we'll be having another
conversation.
Hopefully. Yeah. So in the meantime, what promise do you want to make to the prospective readers to encourage you or encourage them to enter this journey with you? Because this is a saga. So after you read this book, you're like, oh, I got to get the next one.
Yes, it is. It is. And the promise is to try and keep, as I've tried to do with this novel, as authentic as I possibly can to the true Jamaica, by my research, by my writing. For this last novel, I tapped many shoulders to ask them for their perspective. People like Amina Meeks, Blackwood Meeks, Jamaica's foremost storyteller, I had her read a couple of chapters, particularly about the one about from Akampong. I had Rachel Manley, Michael Manley's daughter. I was fortunate to be able to contact her, read a chapter that deals with her grandfather. And I tried to tap as many people who would know about those perspectives. Because obviously, I'm Obi-Wan. So, I'm trying to bring as real as possible the Jamaica of the past.
And as
Ziggy Marley once sang in one of his songs, you don't know your past, you don't know your future. So I'm trying to leave a legacy of part of the past of Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
With the idea of trying to bring sort of a unity of, you know, that I may not know how to know that person and the type of lifestyle they live, but I can get a feel for it. And that they have struggles like I have struggles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my promise.
Yeah. But, you know, when you read a book, it's a road trip, isn't it? It takes you into that world. Because you may not, and the fact that you mentioned Rachel Manley, which book were you referring to? The Ship Stream, or she's written
a
couple of books, Drum Blair, and those things.
It was Drum Blair, really. Although I've read a couple of her other books, but I got the opportunity to actually talk with her, and she read a couple of my chapters to give me feedback. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because the reason I say this, because when you read Drum Blair, it tells you about, say, the planter class, right? And that's important to know the diversity of the country, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what readers – sorry, I got a frog in my throat. Bear with me. What have readers to date have to say about your work? Because I like the fact that when you go on your website, you have that option. That's really good.
Sorry, I had to close the door. My dog is barking. Yeah. I would say I've gotten some really good feedback from a variety of people, from some of them, at least one UE professor who is also a poet. Natalie Corthsay, she had some really impressive things. I was glad to hear. Charles Jr. I feel good about what is being said, both from a story point of view and sort of a sociological impact point of view as well.
Wonderful. Yeah. So, how can folks receive a copy of your fine work?
Great, thank you. So, they can do a couple of things. They can go to Amazon for really most any online bookstore has both the soft cover and the hard cover and the e-book. So they can get it there if they would like. 5 free chapters of the novel just to kind of test it out. They can go to my website and sign up for my newsletter. And my website is dalemafood.com. And they can go there and they'll get an ebook copy of 5 chapters just to kind of feel if they want to actually purchase the book themselves.
Right. It's wonderful. I like the way your website is laid out. You're planning other books for the series? What are you working on? Can you give us a hint? Or we should just
can
whet our appetite after.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, so I've been doing some research for the second novel, which is called Up From Mountains, and it's going to happen in Kingston. And that will have to do with a Lebanese family, which I'm half Lebanese, an Indian family.
Mm-hmm.
And Kaylin, the character Kaylin in the novel, the first novel, she's the only character that will carry the whole way through all 4 novels. She kind of ties the novels together.
She's like the string.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Before I do that, I've also been working on some short stories, 4 short stories, that are both, 2 of them are backstories to When Trees Fall, and then 2 of them are forward stories to When Trees Fall. I've been putting those out in my newsletter. And I'm going to write the last one in the next month, and then come October, I will jump into writing the second novel.
What I really like about your book is that it just captures the nuances of Jamaica. And so for people like myself who are diasporans, you're like, I left Jamaica when I was 7, so, you know, you don't remember much, but I just
right.
really like that. And you know what's really interesting about your book is that about 2 weeks before I read your book, you know, the scene where Archie is talking to the helper and she made pawn, and then she said it was hell on top, hell on bottom, and hallelujah in the middle.
Yes.
Two weeks before I read this book was the first time in my entire life I ever heard that in reference to pawn. Can you believe that? And so when I read it, my eyes popped out. I was like, ah! You know, I just really appreciated it. It made me appreciate the book more. There's just so many nuances that you included. So for people who have not, maybe they're second generation, have not really experienced the Jamaican culture, they would appreciate that. They would learn the subtleties of what makes Jamaica Jamaicans. Or should we say Jamaica makes Jamaicans or Jamaicans make Jamaica?
Well,
I don't know how you would say.
Yeah.
You know?
Denise, I can't thank you for saying that enough, because I worked really hard at trying to leave that, you know, both for Jamaicans, but also for, you know, people who think that Jamaica, all Jamaica is the beach and the reggae and the ganja, which, you know, fine with all those things, but Jamaica is so much more than that. I wanted to realize that Jamaica is such depth and, like you say, nuance in Jamaica. Between the different people.
Yes. And we're just appreciative of that. Even I guess this would be a historical novel, because you brought up Dr. Manti. You brought up the fact that he was his real name is Clark, and he changed it to Manti. And I just like the fact that you brought these historical facts, and you were able to weave it into the novel, and we're just learning so much about Jamaican history, and that is the importance. This is why it's important to write your own. It's important to have people from that experience or that culture write their own story, because if you rely on other people to write your own story or even portray you in media, lots of stereotypes can come about, and we can't have that. We've got to write our own story. And the perfect example, or tell your own image, and the perfect example is John Rostrum. He was a Jamaican, and then he came here, and Freedom's Journal was the first newspaper whose audience is Black, and it was a Jamaican. Yeah.
Was that in Harlem?
No. John Rostrum in the 1800s.
The 1800s.
He created Freedom's Journal. So here's some trivia. John Rostrum is the first Black newspaper in the U.S. was by a Jamaican, John Rostrum. I know that in Jamaica, the first newspaper was by Jacob DaCosta or something like that. You know, and we appreciate him doing that for our culture. But since I'm in the U.S., that's what I appreciate him, John Rustin, doing that. And
absolutely.
Why am I saying that? You are telling your own story. You're not relying on somebody else to make that image for you. You're doing it for yourself. So to learn more about Jamaican Diaspora, visit JamaicanDiaspora.com. To learn more about Chris Daly, visit ChrisDaly360.com. Be sure to visit Dale Mahood at DaleMahood.com. Excellent website. Dale, we really appreciate you spending time with us. Thank you. See you next time. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.